almost invariably they try and get away. So Nick's experience is a typical experience of coming across a leopard at short distance. All you see is a blur of spots and colour gone.
I think they're firmly established in the food chain. They're obviously breeding. I was 12 when I first saw the Black Panther, and those cats are still reported in the same area now. They're here to stay.
Welcome to Big Cat Conversations. We speak directly to people who've encountered one of Britain's big cats. We also discuss the bigger picture. I'm Rick Minter, and thanks for joining me. Welcome to episode 107 of Big Cat Conversations. For this episode, our guest is Wayne, and he's based in Essex. And we've often said in the past that it would be great to hear more from fishermen on the podcast. Well, Wayne is an angler, and the main incident we'll hear about in a minute happened when he was at a fishing lake. So it's very good that he's been in touch and that he's agreed to discuss his experiences and his thoughts on the topic. Wayne, thanks for coming on the show. How are you?
No problem at all, Rick. Thanks for having me. I'm really good, thank you. Really good.
Before you had these incidents, because I think we've got three to talk about, there's one full-on dramatic one, which was a close one in 2011, which would be the main event. But before we even start with the first one, which was earlier than that, had you ever heard about big cats before? Was the subject on your radar at all?
Yeah, even from a young age, really. I can remember my dad and his friends, they'd been out fishing or hunting, and they'd come back, and I can remember them talking multiple times about large cats and stories of local lords or a guy that owned a scrapyard had one years ago that let it go. So I've heard that on your podcast a few times. So it's definitely something I've heard before. And obviously growing up with that information, we sort of expected to see them on a regular basis. Never really did, but I heard a lot of stories of random people all over the county about what they've seen. So, yeah, we just sort of expect that it's a normal event, really, for a lot of people that live out in the country, especially this way.
So it was a talking point in the family and friends. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Some people think, well, it's an extraordinary claim. I think when you hear that variety of people who've had them and collected them and had them in captivity, it's not so extraordinary, actually.
No, not at all. My whole family have always been outdoors people, and multiple friends are gamekeepers, farmers. They've all seen things, reported seeing black cats. Not so much the lynx that I've heard on your podcast previously, but it's mainly the black cats. And again, it's always a case of, yeah, we've seen one, or, you know, it always comes up in conversation that eventually, if you spend any sort of time with anyone in the outdoors.
Yeah, well, we'll go on to that in terms of the fishing networks later on. Can we get on to the first incident then? This was back in 2005. This wasn't a full-on sighting, I gather, but there's something happened in 2005. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was myself. I was fishing a lake. It wasn't very far from my home at all, only about a mile and a half. But again, very rural. And I was fishing the night. Most of the fishing I do is night fishing. I fish for carp. In general, you'll fish at night time. I remember this incident where fishing the night, and it was early hours of the morning. Sun hadn't quite come up yet, but I woke up. I heard a strange noise. And again, when you're out in these conditions, you're out multiple nights or a week sometimes, you get to know your surroundings and common noises. But this a noise that really distracted me because I'd not heard it before. And it was like a scraping, scratching sound. It went on for a good couple of minutes. And again, it was very off-putting because, again, I was on my own, tucked away in a reed bed. No one really knew I was there apart from friend of mine and my parents, so I was a bit off put, if you know what I mean. It's quite a strange, it's sharp scraping on a tree. So I listened to that for a while, and I think I fell back to sleep. So a few hours later, during the morning, I didn't catch anything that night or in the morning, so I had to wander around just to see if I could find the fish and see if they're feeding another part of the lake. And as I got to the other side of the lake, directly opposite where I was fishing, there was, I think it was an ash tree halfway along the bank. And it had been completely stripped of the bark, scraped away. If I can remember rightly, probably about a foot off the ground to about 3 or 4 foot high, just completely scraped off. It's one of those things where it didn't occur to me straight away what it could have been, because I've seen deer have done this sort of thing in the past. I've witnessed it, but not to that extent. And you could see the scratch marks clearly in the wood. It'd gone right through the bark.
Ash has got quite a smooth bark, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's fairly easy to do, but it was the amount of that had been taken off. It took me aback a little bit. So I was a bit like, was this a crazy individual that had come down with a blade or something, which is very unusual, or else? Don't really think much more about it. And then a week later, it was in my local paper. A dog walker that had used to use the area had reported it, as they believed it could have been a cat. And there was, if I remember rightly, there was a local expert or an expert they contacted who said they believed it could have been a cat. Around that sort of time, there was reports of sightings and a few footprints that this expert had found. So at that first incident, although I didn't see anything, I wasn't very far away from it if that was a cat. So it could have been, but again, there was lots there to say it could have been a close encounter, so to speak. The only thing that did connect a little bit, and I can remember, it wasn't that trip, but it happened a lot. We used to always talk about it, that lake, and it's happened once since then at my lake of fish at the moment, is the smell of popcorn.
Ah, which we've discussed on the podcast, haven't we?
I remember we talked about it, and I talked with a friend about it, and I listened to the podcast, and it popped up, so talking about smell. I think there was a lady you were talking to, and they said about the smell, and then I think one of you mentioned popcorn, and it hit me straight away. I was like, I've smelt that 100%. It was not extremely strong, but you could definitely get a whiff every now and then. So it was sort of, there's a few bits and pieces that could have been. We didn't see anything there. There was reports from other people in that area, but that was my first type of encounter that could have been a cat. And obviously with the smell, it sort of potentially leaned towards it could have been something like that.
Interesting. So in terms of the marks on the trees, you didn't feel at that time, you presumably didn't have a smartphone camera to hand, but it would have been good to take a photograph, but perhaps you weren't that suspicious about it being a big cat, so you didn't take a photo anyway, is that right?
Yeah, again, I wish I had. I mean, the tree's still there, and it has repaired quite a lot, but there's still a little bit of that there. It hasn't perfectly repaired, even this day. But because at the time, I didn't really think much of it, it wasn't until we saw that in the paper, thinking, oh, actually, that's where I was fishing. That's the tree, and then it sort of made me think a little bit more, and I was a little bit more wary when I carried on fishing that.
Yeah, very interesting. And for listeners who haven't heard, on episode 100, certainly we revisited this issue about what do leopards smell like, because there's this issue that they don't have a strong smell, say like a fox. If a fox is about close by, you can often smell. They've got quite a sort of musty smell. As a mammal, glands, you know, what do they emit? What smell does a leopard smell like? The general commentary on it is that not very strong at all, actually, but if there is a smell, it can be a sort of nutty, popcorny smell, which is quite subtle, but is still there. And of course, that is a quite unusual smell to sense in nature anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it always got brought up. I remember someone saying to me before I was fishing down there years ago, I can remember them saying it to me, have you been eating popcorn? I was like, no, not at all. Do you know? No. Or have you been using it as bait? No, not at all. And it came up, but there's a few times around that one area that it came up, and it just made me smile, and it took me aback a little bit when it came up, because I've never put that together. I would never. Why would you? But, you know, possible black leopard popcorn, you wouldn't put it together.
No, and also that's the first time I've heard, you know, all these reports I've heard over the years, it's the first time I've heard somebody mention it. Having said that, I haven't asked witnesses, have you smelt a popcorn smell? But for you to bring it up is very interesting. So nice one. Thank you for that. Now, we then move to the main event we're going to talk about, which was 2011. You were night fishing, and this was 5 a.m., again, at a fishing lake in Essex. So, yeah, do tell us all about it, please.
Yes, probably about 20 miles away from the first encounter, if you like. Not too far. Fished the night. This time I actually caught something that was better. And what I normally do is, it's sort of a ritual for myself, and especially a lot of other carp anglers, if any listen to this, they'll almost guarantee do the same. You sort of, if you catch a fish, you normally have a cup of tea or a coffee to sort of celebrate that. So I had two fish in the night, actually, drinking coffee with a friend of mine. So I'd used all my gas up. So it was early hours of the morning. I had a spare gas canister in my car. So behind my swim, where you fish, a set of steps leading up to where you park the car, off the track, and I've walked up the steps. And as I got to the top of the steps, I've looked at my car. I've just about to go to unlock it, and just to the right of where my car's parked on the other side of the track on the grass verge is a full-blown black cat. Just sat there completely in the open, looking down the track, away from me, was looking to my right, basically, just sat there. It was even talking about it now, it gives you sort of goosebumps, because it was one of those times where it's not very happy. Happened many times in my life where I've looked at something thinking, am I really looking at this? Is this really happening? Really took me back. And for some reason, I don't know why I did it, I unlocked my car. So obviously it's beeped, and the cat's looked directly at me. And horrendously, again, now I'm doing it in my voice, but it really got my back up, because it dropped itself down low, almost not to pounce, but to, I don't know, it was trying to hide itself, but it opened its mouth completely and hissed. I think I maybe scared it, or it was maybe cautious. I don't know, but it hissed. I saw its teeth. It probably was, you know, it wasn't too far away from me. It was on the other side of the track. It watched me a little bit, but I started to back down the steps a little bit. I started, I'm not going to get any closer, because when it hissed at me, I genuinely thought that, is this going to come at me? So I come back down the steps a little bit. It looked at me a little bit longer, and it just turned, went straight into the cornfield behind it. And again, just tipped the tail a little bit through the cornfield, but then it vanished. I didn't decide to try and get a better look. I just thought I'd get back down to where my bivvy was and just sort of think about what had just happened. But yeah, so not alongside him, but again, it was definitely something that will stick with me forever, because I just didn't expect to see that at all, you know.
To what extent was it reacting to the car being remotely opened, and to what extent was it reacting to you, or both?
Well, it looked in my direction because I'd stepped up, and it would have been able to see me quite easily. It definitely had a bead straight for me. It locked on straight to me straight away. I was wearing like a camouflage jacket as well, so it probably couldn't really work out what it was, maybe. But it was definitely locked on to me straight away. As soon as it saw me, it dropped its body, mainly the front part of its body. I'd say most part of the front, I could still see its behind and the tail sticking up. So it definitely went down in like a, not like a strike pose, but almost just to, maybe to cover itself. I don't really know what it was doing, but it was very alarming, to say the least.
So was it unnerved by the car noise?
Yeah, I'd say so. It definitely startled it, I think. Although it's in the car there, definitely, but I think it just caught it off guard. I've carried on looking up steps just in case it's come down after me. Your fight or flight response is kicking a little bit then when you see something like that. So I was very cautious about what was going to happen next. And as I've got to the bottom of the steps, I've looked to my left, and there's another swim to my left, but it's a dead end, so you can't really go anywhere. You have to walk back past myself. There was a muntjac laying down, tucked itself against the back of the swim.
A muntjac deer?
Yeah. So I don't know. Could have been a complete coincidence, but my thought process was a bit later on when I sort of thought about it, why would it be so aggressive towards me? Because I didn't really present much of a threat of it. Obviously, that's not going to know that, but maybe it was just annoyed the fact that I disturbed. It was hunting that, couldn't find it. It got to the track, couldn't find it, and I've just appeared, and it's taken it back a little bit, maybe. Could have been a coincidence, but again, it might have been that it was actually hunting the muntjac deer, maybe, and the muntjac just hiding where it could, because it couldn't get any further.
How interesting. It was trapped at the waterside. Did you detect anything in the muntjac's behaviour, or do you think there was anything in the muntjac's behaviour that made it seem like it could have been knowing it was under threat?
Yeah, because when you see a muntjac, they don't hang around. You know, you'll see it startle, it'll bolt, or you generally see it when it starts to run. They very rarely see them hanging around. Unless you're in a car. But I reckon I was probably about 4 or 5 metres from the muntjac when I got to the bottom of the steps, and it stayed there. So it was very, it probably saw me as a much lesser threat. If it was being chased by the cat, probably thought itself a much lesser threat.
It probably realised you were a very convenient entity coming along as a distraction.
Yeah, I'd understand why the cat would be so agitated if I'd got in its way, maybe. it didn't feel like it was actively aggressive. My initial reaction was pretty much stay back, don't come any closer, because it was literally, I measured it. I actually went on Google Maps and measured it roughly, and it's around 8 meters from the point from where I stood to where the cat roughly would have been.
That's close.
Yeah, so from that position, the wind was in my face, because I can remember certain areas I'd fish on the lake depending on the breeze. So the wind had been in my face, so the cat wouldn't have picked up my scent at all, really. So again, literally, the only indication I'd been in the area was when it actually saw me. So I think a case of it being startled, a mixture really, startled because of the noise from my vehicle and seeing me, not being able to locate maybe the monk jack, maybe agitate it. I've got so close to it, and it's a case of that's its response, isn't it? It's hiss at me to get me to stay away. Don't get me wrong, it was definitely big enough to do to, you know, to be a threat to me 100%, but I think it's less willing to do that. I think it was more go away, leave me alone, and I'm going to try and go as soon as I possibly can. That's how I'd read the situation anyway, in my experience.
Yeah, and were you carrying a fishing gear? So it probably got worried about the fact you had a lot of clobber with you that could damage it or something, or were you not?
No, I hadn't packed up at all. I just literally left my kit where it was, walked up to my swim, because we could do that there, walked up to my vehicle, to grab my gas canister. So no, I wasn't going to get I remember I had the baseball cap on and a camouflage jacket. Maybe it's the fact that I just startled it, really.
And you said it was big enough to damage you. What do you reckon about the scale of it compared to a Labrador dog?
Yeah, so luckily enough, I've got a Labrador. I've got a chocolate lab. He's fairly good size. I'd say he wasn't, so the cat wouldn't have been as high as my dog. Definitely not as tall as he is, but a lot longer. Again, it's a common theme. Again, not completely black, but definitely black. But you could definitely make out the mottled pattern.
Okay.
Because that's something that caught me back a little bit. What I was looking at initially, because it was black, but again, you could definitely make out a pattern there on the fur. Head, not a monstrous head, good size, enough to show a good set of jaws on it. The rounded ears, initially when I saw it, but when it opened its mouth at me, the ears were pinned right back, almost like a dog would do, if that makes sense. They were pinned right back. I remember that vividly. And a very large tail, I'd say almost as long as its own body, turned into the corn. You could see it just protruding through the cornfield, the top of the corn.
Did it carry on moving, or did it go into the corn and field and stop?
I can remember it turned and just sort of pounced into the corn. I remember it sort of pounced into the corn, got through to the corn. I could hear it moving through, and then the tail eventually just disappeared. And at that point, I just went down the steps. I didn't sort of try and get any more eyes on, because again, I wasn't too sure what I was going to do from there. I didn't know whether to contact someone or just sort of speak to a friend who was fishing the other side of the lake. I was thinking, how am I going to say I've actually finally seen one? But yeah, so it was, yeah, definitely just turned, pounced, and it was away. I think, like I said, it was more a case of looking for a reason to get away more than maybe. Again, that's hindsight. At the moment, at that instant, I was thinking, what's going to happen here, you know, because it was very off-putting.
Yeah, and what was the lighting conditions? It's 5 a.m. in the morning, but what time of year?
Oh, it's summer, middle of summer, so it's very light. So it's quite a warm morning as well, if I can remember rightly. So yeah, I could see pretty much all of it. I remember the time of it because I can remember I looked at some of the photos on the same trip of the fish I caught, and it was around 4:30. I took the photo, so yeah, it was around 5 a.m. just on first light,
which is a good time for them to be out at that time of year.
Yeah.
When you first saw it, was it standing, moving? What was its locomotion or stance or poise?
It was actually sat down. Right, it was sat down, it was looking down the track, and it was almost, how can I describe it? Like an inquisitive sort of, it was moving its head around to try and get a better look further down the track. I don't know whether it's in something else, maybe. There was a few large strands of grass where it was in, so it was slightly covered, but not a lot. Thinking about further down the track, it maybe could have been a bit more cover from view of anything further down the track, but my view of it was gleaming. I saw much all of it apart from its actual paws. I saw a lot.
The noise, So it was a hissing type noise. So it wasn't the sort of standard guttural leopard warning cough. It was more of a hiss than a cough.
It's hard to describe, really, but it opened its mouth and it was like a hiss. And I can remember when I went and spoke to my friend later on that day on the other side of the lake, told him about it. Again, a normal sort of wry look, you know, what have you been drinking sort of discussions. And we sort of went through it and I sort of going through pictures and we found a couple of YouTube videos and he showed me and it made the noise. I was like, that's it, that's it. That's the clip. And it was like a hissing, opened its mouth and hissed. And yeah, that's what I can remember. No sort of roar as such, but it was the only way I can describe it as a hiss.
Yeah, well, one of my friends actually saw a puma, a mountain lion, at midnight coming back from a meeting in Gloucestershire in November, and it crossed the road and went into a wood because it was actually at a carcass, at a roadside carcass. He thinks it was a fallow deer carcass, and he thinks it had been hit. It hadn't been predated. It had just been hit, and it would start scavenging. So he disturbed it, and he waited for it to come out of the wood because he wanted to try and film it. So he parked his car on the verge side to see if it would come out, and it didn't. So he very cautiously went along, peered into the wood with his high beam torch, and he didn't have his thermal camera because he was in his wife's car. He had a thermal camera in his own vehicle, otherwise he would have filmed it. But it was sitting there about 20 metres back into the woodland, and he got the picture of the eye shine, and he said that gave him a real aggressive hiss because it was thoroughly narked by having it, you know, it's the feeding of the carcass disturbed. And yeah, he said it was like an intense cobra type warning hiss.
That makes sense. Yeah, very similar to that, I'd say.
Well, if we can, we'll try and locate a YouTube video with that sound on that we could put on the website with this edition, if you could help us find that again.
I'll have a look, definitely.
And in your conclusion on seeing it and its behaviour and its size and everything, are you assuming it was a melanistic leopard, a black leopard?
Yeah, but like, again, my knowledge is very limited, only from what I've learned from listening to the podcast very recently. Yeah, so from what I understand, and I've looked at a few pictures, I'd say yes, a leopard with that, I want to say mottled pattern, but it was definitely a pattern on the fur. Wasn't completely jet black as you'd expect to see in sort of the films and pictures.
As you might know, it's quite rare for people to see any patterning and texture. The majority just say, no, I didn't see any markings, any patterning, any mottling. But people sometimes do, and you'd expect that if the light's in the right direction or if you're close enough, because it can happen. But of course, individuals vary as well. But I think maybe it's a combination, maybe the light, the angle of the light and the fact you were close enough, perhaps.
Yeah.
Were there any other standout features that you remember about it, like shoulder blades or thickness of legs or, I don't know, the eyes themselves? What else occurred to you about it?
Definitely a very muscular animal. See that when it went down on its hunches, you could see shoulder blades and the way it was positioning itself. The eyes, again, like a pale yellow with jet black dots. Real piercing stare it's got. But that's all I can really remember. I can remember seeing the shoulder blades, definitely. The legs, not, again, like I said, not as long as my dog's. I don't really, fairly thick, but not overly. From memory, again, I'll be honest, my main focus was generally on the face of it when it was hissing. I'd say the whole thing lasted probably around 10 seconds. Again, that sounds like a quite long time, but and it was at the time, but like I said, I was mainly focused on its mouth.
If only you'd had a body camera on.
The worst thing is probably about 20 feet on my bed chair was my digital SLR.
Oh.
Oh, no. I've been taking pictures of the fish. Everything was set up. You know, if I had it around, I literally had it around my neck and obviously about to make the coffee, took it off, realised had no gas, went up and then saw it. So frustrating, I know, I'm sure that's not what you want to hear, but...
You wouldn't have got a picture, would you? In that 10 seconds, you were only thinking about protection and how you could react if it was coming closer, I imagine.
Absolutely. Wouldn't even bat an eyelid. I wouldn't have seen anything else if it approached me apart from that one. If it had been hunting in pairs, I'd have been for it, I think. I would not would have looked at anything else because I was just fixed completely, tunnel vision on that.
Did the muntjac then scarper, do you think? Did you notice what the muntjac did afterwards?
Yeah, it did eventually. So I went down back to the bivvy, sort of gathered my thoughts, picked up my phone to call my friend, like I said, fishing on the other side, and it eventually just ran past back down from to my right against along the bank. So I reckon it managed to escape somewhere, but it definitely going the same direction as the cat did. So yeah, it was eventually made an escape, but I think it was quite lucky if it was being hunted, that is.
Yeah, it owes you one.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Did you hear of any other sightings? Had that location had any history that you knew about beforehand, or subsequently did you talk to people and hear about any history of sightings there, or was this a one-off as far as you know in terms of what's been reported?
So when I spoke to my friend, as soon as I told him again, he did say, and then his brother came down a bit later on that day and said, oh, well, it's been in the local paper. There's a lady that lived just over the other side of the field to where this was, had reported one in her back garden. And there was talk of another angler that saw a cat that went down to the bank after some geese. And we think it's the same place. Wasn't anyone we knew, but it was just the guys put two and two together and decided that it must be the same place based on the information that was given. So, and I think that was talked about maybe on a forum. I think they were talking about it for what, in that time. So, yeah, there's been a few bits and pieces in a local paper about them in the area. So, yeah, so it's definitely been talked about.
How did you feel as somebody who'd seen one in that situation about telling other anglers who would come to that spot? Was it awkward, or did you feel you had a sense of duty to warn people, or was it just too difficult? How did you spread the news or not about it?
I think initially you sort of go through that phase of, I need to tell someone. It's the first person I saw, I would have told them everything, because you just relay information dump on someone else just to see their reaction as well. But just to tell someone, I spoke to my my wife at the time, my girlfriend, told her, and she was just mortified.
She believed you, yeah?
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, she was quite taken back, but I mean, she's a local to this area as well. Pretty much grew up together, and she'd heard information about cats being seen. So it wasn't a massive shock to her, but just the fact that it was so close. I think it's one of those things, especially with anglers, you know, you talk about all sorts of types of things eventually. You know, you spend time together in the evenings around a stove talking about life. You know, people have told me about things they've seen flying around in the skies, or they've seen a ghost. But when you bring up big cats, no one really scoffs too much. You get the odd remark, but most people have had a sighting, or they don't really dismiss it. So when it's with anglers and people that live or work in the countryside, it feels a lot more confident to talk about it. But when having worked in the city with talking to people like that, they're so far detached from that world. They just don't understand. They don't sort of appreciate it, or even are willing to acknowledge that it would even exist in the UK.
Do you feel there's a duty to warn fellow fishermen that they could have a close-up encounter with an animal like that? Or do you think, well, it's a known sort of issue in fishing circles, so it either happens to somebody that they get a sighting or it doesn't? So did you want to spread the word about that one instantly or not?
Not so much that I felt people at risk. I think that if the animal had come up to me and it had sort of, if it gained ground on me, you know, it was clearly coming at me, then I think, okay, I didn't even think about calling the local police at the time. But I think I would have done that. I would have spoke to the fishery owner and just, you know, put it out there. Because obviously that's a different situation altogether. But because of the way it reacted, eventually it scarpered it. It made me feel like, okay, it's not really willing to attack me. Most anglers are aware that, I'd say, the ones that have been angling for a long period of time. I mean, some fishermen, especially carp fishermen, will spend 2 to potentially 3 nights a week throughout the year fishing. So they're very seasoned people in the outdoors, and they're going to come across all sorts of things. So I think a cat is low down on their concerns of, you know, especially with those that are fishing in the urban sort of places. You know, there's all sorts of things to worry about.
other human beings can be far more of an issue.
Sometimes it's more of your concern than the cats again, but you know, there's times when I've fished with no brolly at all, just on top of a bed chair, completely on my own in the open since that. And it's in the back of my mind, definitely, but I've never felt like it would, that anything could happen to me. I think it was more interested in staying well clear than coming after me, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, thank you for that one. Very, very dramatic and so good to hear a close-up one. And so we now move to another event where you didn't see anything, but you certainly sensed something. And it's still going to be very interesting to hear about. So that was a bit later on, was it? A few years later, was it?
Yeah, it was only 2 years ago now. And it's a lake that I'm still fishing at the moment. Again, throughout the night, fishing. Like I said before, there's certain sounds that you hear that you pick up as an angler. For instance, moorhens will make a certain noise when there's carp close. If they make a crash on the surface or move against the surface of the water, moorhens will make a type of noise. And you always pick up on that. You think, oh, brilliant, the fish are close. And it sounds crazy, but it's one of the things that we definitely use for locating the fish. And it was, again, I wouldn't say it was early as more. It was more middle of the night, I think, from memory. To my right-hand side, there was a large bay, a bit of a swamped area type thing, and a few birds are nested in the swampy area, and two swans were also located in the swamp as well. And every now and then, if a dog walker went past, they may hiss, they may make a noise, but nothing extreme. You know, I walked around there a couple of times during that trip, and a few noises, but nothing crazy. And I remember waking up, still dark, and they were going absolutely ballistic. Everything, the coots, moorhens, and the swans. So I could hear them flapping against branches of sticks, against the water, just trying to move out of the way from whatever was bothering them. So I've got a quite high-powered head torch. One of the settings is quite high-powered. So I've got out of my bed chair, out of the bivvy, and I've shone it into the bay itself, and I see the swans bow waving into the water, just getting out into the lake. So I just walk back around the back of the bay. So I've gone onto the footpath, walked around the fence line, and as my beams shot down the path, something's bolted on the right-hand side of the bush, the other side of the hedge line, and it's come right along past me, just the other side of the fence line, and bolted up the field towards the gate. And again, I didn't see it, but it was large. And the only thing that I can think of where to go for the swans potentially would be an otter. And there are otters in the area, unfortunately. But they're not that large. They're not that fast. And they probably wouldn't come up to the bank. They'd probably go out into the water if they were bothered by myself. So that was what actually happened. It just bolted off. And again, it really, again, put the hairs up, because as soon as I saw the movement as such, I didn't get a good look at it, but it just, this, the almost a silhouette flash past just the other side of the hedge, if you know what I mean. The thing that put two and two together was, again, one of the anglers that came up to see me the next day said, have you been eating popcorn? And it's just come up again, and it's straight away I was thinking to myself, blimey, is it? Because he said, oh, just further down the bank I can smell it, I could have had a whiff. Again, I'm not saying it is definitely that, I can't confirm it, but this time, because it's happened again, another instance of a potential cat. I didn't get a good look at it, but the animals, the birds that were in that bay, were really distressed. And again, I've seen otters close by to the bird life. They don't react like that. So it was definitely something that definitely put the frights up to them. And it was definitely a large animal to move like that. And I didn't feel it go past me, but I heard it bolt off the beam of my torch going through it. Definitely scared it away.
It was the intensity of the reaction from nature, from the swans.
Yeah.
Obviously, they would react to foxes and dogs, wouldn't they? But they wouldn't presumably feel that they're under predatory attack. I mean, I know some dogs can misbehave with swans and realise swans are actually quite, you know, tricky things and could injure them. But foxes are not normally able to predate a healthy adult swan, are they?
No. I've known otters potentially to go after swans, definitely go after coots. I've seen dead coots from otters, obviously the fish as well gets attacked by the otters quite on a regular basis, especially where I fish. But I think it's the fact that hearing it bolt along the fence line, along the field, the other side of the hedge, was definitely, it was big. It was a lot bigger than otter. It's the fact that the way they reacted, dog walkers have gone past with dogs during that day. They hadn't reacted like that. Dogs had definitely gone into the swampy area. They'd hissed a little bit, the swans definitely, but not to that extent.
Do you think it had passed by you and ignored you? It hadn't been curious about your presence, you don't think, necessarily?
I don't think so. I mean, I've again, fairly tucked away, and it's one of those things that where I was positioned, wind's very important in carp fishing. And where I was positioned, if it was a cat, they wouldn't be able to pick up my scent at all. So that's one thing, again, that's it's happened multiple times. Those, the three events have generally been, those encounters have been a common thing, getting so close because of the wind direction. So I think that definitely plays a part in how close, or if you can get a sight in, is if they can pick up your scent. I'm assuming that's what's potentially happened. But obviously camouflaged up, I've camouflaged Broly, so you're sort of tucked away, fairly quiet. You know, I think it was a case of it's my beam torch going into the bay and along the path. It's clearly startled it, and it's bolted. And again, it was definitely off-putting. I was trying to think about what it could have been, but it's when the other wrangler came up and said about the popgrass, thinking, oh, okay, maybe it's close by.
Do fishermen and anglers wear body cams or set up trail cameras near them? It strikes me that it's almost that sort of thing ought to be done now in some situations, although, of course, Sod's Law, nothing will happen the time you do it, but and something will happen the time you don't.
There's definitely a lot of anglers that have GoPros for their fishing. There's quite a large uplift in YouTubers that are fishermen or people making a living out of making videos. So a lot of fishing is filmed now compared to what it used to be. So yeah, a lot of them have at least a digital SLR video function. A lot of them have seen GoPros, drones even, especially on large lakes, to actually find the fish, believe it or not. And trail cams is something that I put out with my, when I take my son quite regularly, we always put a trail cam out to see what we can catch in the night. Again, we haven't really caught anything highly interesting, but normally mice, the odd badger here and there. I have heard a few people putting the cameras out, but it's generally just for the night to see what they catch or to see what's been chewing the bait in the night.
So there is a chance, you know, the fact that the process and the background to the fishing situation is being filmed by some people, for albeit for different reasons. There's a chance somebody's going to snap a cat in that way, I guess, in the future.
Yeah, I've seen one angler show me a picture of what he said was a black cat. The other side of the field, which is where I'm fishing at the moment, but it's quite a distance. Well, that does look like a cat, but it's very, you know, it's not a clear picture.
It's not going to influence anybody necessarily.
No, but he was adamant that's what he saw, and that's the best picture he could get. So, which is fair, but for me, having seen what I've seen, I know they're there, but for me, that fly out. So I've heard of people taking pictures, but again, it's whether people want to highlight it as such. You know, fishery owners, there's a lot of money in fishery, the day ticket fisheries as well, and if they say it's a big cat, people aren't going to want to go there. So it, do you know what I mean? It's one of those things that can escalate into the wrong direction for some people.
Sure, it's a sensitive subject and a lot of people keep the lid on it. And so talking to other anglers and fishermen, what are some of the best, most dramatic or interesting stories you've heard about other big cat encounters from people?
I've heard all sorts of stories. Generally, like ones talked about before with the watching a cat try to come down the bank after the geese. But I can remember one story. It was actually in a magazine, I thought, or it might have been in a book. It's been talked about a bit for my friends because they sort of bring it up, say, oh, is that what happened to you? So the story was an angler's fishing in the night. He dropped his bivvy door down just to give himself a bit of protection from the rain that's coming in, but didn't do it completely up. He was asleep on his bed, but his arm was hanging out of the bed chair, out of the sleeping bag, and he was asleep, and he heard something creeping around outside. And he's thinking, okay, well, wonder what this is. And he heard the fabric move, something sniff around near his hand, something touch his arm, and then turn around and walk off and walk away. It's, oh, someone's dog's come up to me and sniffed my hand. Didn't think nothing of it. And the next day, he said that there was police officers walking around the fence line saying that a big cat had been seen in the area and had he seen anything. And his reaction was, oh, wow, was it a dog or was it actually a cat? Was it a cat? Probably not, but it was a story that we always talked about. And I can't remember where I read it, but I can remember we talked about it quite a bit. If that had happened, wow, that would be a hell of an encounter.
The curious cat.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in terms of a cat at fishing lakes and fishing situations, presumably there's all kinds of things and events and smells and wildlife and birds and animals that are going to attract it. As a fisherman, what would you say? And not many cats actually learn to fish directly, so they're not, presumably they're not necessarily after fish in the water's edge. They're after sort of water birds and pigeons and swans and geese rather than the fish, do you think?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's a lot of, especially on the lakes I fish, there's always swans, coots, moorhens, geese. You can get a large amount of Canadian geese in large numbers, especially on the lake fish at the moment. So again, they can be easy pickings. But with any kind of water, it will attract deer as well. Monk jacks, other deer, all sorts of wildlife, because it's a water source, I guess. Multiple times I've been fishing, I've seen deer close to where I've fishing, mainly monk jack, the odd deer here and there. And I think it's generally the first lake we talked about, and then the one we'll talk about at the moment. There's not many areas where it can go. So it's almost like the deer will get funneled into those positions where they'll come across the lake, and they're sort of stuck between the lake and the fence line until they get almost a mile down, further down the road. So it's almost trapped in an area for a little while. So it's almost like a choke point for them. Potentially, maybe that's what the cats do. They get an area where they can funnel prey in, and they'll hold in those areas until something appears. Maybe, I don't know. But you know, there's always going to be wildlife. Very rare you'll find a lake where there's nothing there. With anywhere in the world, I guess, if there's water, there's going to be wildlife.
If it's where the prey drink, the predator knows that, and so knows to patrol that area. And I guess particularly deer are going to drink at larger lakes when the landscape is more dry. I mean, there's all kinds of water sources that deer can drink at otherwise. But that is a good point. Prey from large or small bird life to bigger mammals, there are food sources that the cats will be interested in.
Yeah. I mean, rabbits as well. I mean, the first place we talked about was always rabbits around there. Incredible. It was rife. You know, you walk across a field and there'd be hundreds of them all across the field moving from your presence. So a mass amount of food source. Definitely changed in recent years. There's been a massive reduction in rabbits in a lot of areas. So again, that's one of the things that has gone away from the cats, if that's something they're eating.
Sure, rabbits is a good source of food, but of course they do ebb and flow. The populations of rabbits in different parts of the country fluctuates a great deal, but I'm sure it's a mainstay of their diet, as are pigeons, actually. Yeah. Do you ever see deer swimming in the lakes? Because deer do swim. I've seen them swimming on my trail cameras through sort of streams and things, and on a big pond, actually.
Yeah, not so much on the lakes obviously, because there's not heavy amounts of them, not in large groups. But I know of lakes where, yeah, the deer do get in the water, and you know, they do use it quite regularly. So yeah, but not so much where I am. There is deer, but they're few and far between.
Okay, and how has all of this influenced you, having this close encounter and being aware and alert to big cats? Are you now super alert to potential big cats when you fish, or is it just part of the background thoughts of nature that you have as a fisherman, or is it front of mind, or where is it in your thought process as an angler?
To be honest, it hasn't really changed too much because of the fact that it was always discussed when I was younger. I've always sort of expected to see them, even from a young age. When we was primary school age, we used to go out into the woods with friends and see if we could find one. So it's one of those things that you sort of grew up that they're potentially going to come across one, although it was still shocking to see one up close. The only time where it's really changed for me is since I've become a parent and when I take my son with me, not I'm concerned, but I'm just a little bit more wary of making sure that he's, you know, he's tucked up safe because he sleeps and he's a little bit next to mine and he's tucked away safe and, you know, nothing get close to him. Obviously, so he doesn't wander off in the night, so to speak. But it's definitely something that if we walk to the back to the car at night, he's next to me. Not because I think anything is going to attack him, but it's just that in that back of that mind, a little bit, you know, the stories that I've heard from your podcast that have alarmed me a little bit about the little girl having a false charge, that did take me back a little bit. I was like, oh, blimey, you know, what if, you know, it's quite alarming.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to happen once in a while that people do have those close encounters and young people are around.
Because of the reduction in some, like I say, rabbits is up there on the menu, there's massive reduction. So again, the more the food goes away, are they going to get pushed to do something a bit silly? And it's, you know, it's just precaution. It's one of those things. I just keep him close to me when he's with me. So I'll finish work at 11 o'clock at night. I'll go down to the lake in the middle of the night and I'll put some bait in, prep him for my next trip. And I'll go down there pitch black. You know, sometimes I forget my torch. I know exactly where I'm going. Don't really think about it, to be honest. It's not something that really goes through my mind. Don't worry, if I hear something, I'll stop. Okay, what was that? But I don't feel that there's a threat at this time from those cats. I think they don't want to be anywhere near us. They don't have any interest in us at all. Way I see it, we put them there, they're here now, and I think they've just got to sort of deal with what they've got in front of them. And you know, say they don't want anything to do with us, they just want to be left alone, hunt and live their lives.
Has it made you more alert to the sounds of nature and better peripheral vision and whatever, or would you say you were like that anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been like that because, you know, like I said, I've hunted and fished most of my life, so you're brought up to be quite alert, especially when you're fishing, to figure in where the fish may be. But yeah, I think it's, you're a bit more switched on. And every now and then when I go, if I do go and I think, you just get a feeling, oh, could I see something? I'll take my camera with me just in case. Especially if anyone say anything about popcorn. Take my camera with me just in case. It might begin. Might find a half-eaten bag of...
Butterkissed.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, the only thing that keeps me wary now is, you know, if I smell that.
And what about your son? Do you talk to him about it? And has he got any thoughts on it himself? Does he think it's cool and exciting or interesting? Or has he got mixed views on it or what?
Yeah, every time we go in the car, he wants to see if we can find one.
Okay.
I think it's one of those things where I've got to be careful I don't throw him down the wrong way where he's obsessed with things that he doesn't need to be obsessed about or concerned or worried. I'm very open with him about nature and how the world is. So I explain to him from my point of view and what I believe and how the cats have got here. I explain that these animals are here. They're not dangerous to us as long as we leave them alone. And, you know, they should be respected as we do all animals. You know, I'm a fisherman, but I respect the fish I catch. All the animals that I come across, even when I've hunted in the past, don't really do that anymore. But my brother still hunts. But again, very much we throw that down our children's necks, really, the respect for animals. So, yeah, so he's fully aware of it. Doesn't seem to be too cautious. I think at night time he'd probably be a little bit more cautious. But again, I don't go out in the countryside too much room at night unless we're fishing. But, you know, he knows that I keep him safe and I explain that they're more scared of us than we are of it. So,
and would you say his overall emotion is more excitement and wonder rather than fear, or does he got a mixed view?
At this stage, you know, he hasn't seen anything, so he's, you know, it's cool. He's really excited about it. I'm sure he's told his friends. He's drawn pictures of stuff, not all the time, but he does, you know, he does get excited if I ever bring it up. But I think, oh yeah, I think if you saw one, as anyone, it'd be quite an event. Once you get over the fear, it's incredible. It's an amazing creature. It's beautiful. But I think your natural reaction is right to have some fear with something like that.
Is the fishing bait potentially a lure? Is it quite smelly, some of the fishing bait you use? Could that be an attraction to one?
Potentially, yeah. Some of it is very potent. Some of it's known to destroy marriages. It's quite a potent smell if you bring it in the house, so I wouldn't be surprised if you took it fishing, it would attract something. It's quite a high potent smell, some of the bait you use, So potentially it could be something that does attract them, yeah.
Okay, and you've sort of answered this, I think, by the implication of what you've been saying, but just generally, what's your attitude to big cats possibly naturalising in Britain, but certainly being around and living wild in the countryside? What's your sort of general emotional attitude about that?
Yeah, I think it's great. Again, like I said, I've been brought up to appreciate it, and it's almost like it's a common knowledge, really. It's almost bizarre to me that people didn't think they were there. But at the same time, the fact that, you know, I genuinely believe they've been released in years gone by, they've clearly bred, they're here because of us. You know, the only thing that gets up my back a little bit is when they're referred to as beasts and everyone panics over their sightings and things like that. Like, well, you know, they're animals that have been put here because of us. We should provide them a little bit of respect, a little bit of care. There should be something in place for them, really, in my view, because I get why people might shoot them if they're destroying livestock and things like that, or like I said on the previous podcast, attacking horses, which is awful because it, you know, sort of emotional stress and again financial as well. But at the same time, they're only animals that are trying to live, and they're here because of us. But I brought them here, and then we've decided that we can't have them legally, so we've almost abandoned them to the point there it's just a myth to everybody. And I don't think that's, to me, that's not fair.
Yeah, but of course it is very difficult to do anything more set piece and more formally, isn't it? Because of the sort of consequences and unintended consequences of that. And we've got to be careful we don't overreact. It's so difficult to get the balance right, isn't it? It's not easy.
It really isn't. I think, unfortunately, until something does either go awry where we've got perfect footage, concrete evidence, and we have to go, okay, everyone goes, okay, they are here, we accept it. Or unfortunately, something goes awry where someone gets injured when they got too close. And then obviously, unfortunately, that will go the wrong way then. And then people will be crying out for them to be removed, which will be a really difficult situation, I think.
Which would be impossible, really, to be honest.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and also just because one has an incident, one causes an incident, doesn't mean to say we tar the others with the same brush. One example doesn't prove a point.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, very interesting that you have that view. And do you think that is pretty common amongst fellow anglers, or do you ever hear some who are bothered and think they're a right hassle and right pain, or do you hear people's emotional reactions and attitudes to them?
Most people I've spoken to, like, either completely amused by it all, or don't really have an opinion, or they are fascinated. Not to the point, I mean, a lot of us listen to all types of podcasts when you're fishing. And a couple of my friends have started listening to you as well since I've spoken about it. And they are interested. Again, the fishing is the mainstay. That's why they're there. But again, it's definitely in their mind. And I think everyone's keen to have a sighting. And I think most people are quite pro, but no one's too overly fussed. I think it's a case of we accept it as part of nature. Some people have seen it, some people haven't. Can everyone prove they're there? No, but it's one of those things that it's there. But again, a lot of people haven't seen a badger in real life. Some people haven't seen adders. Do you know, there's lots of animals that don't see them because they're not looking and don't spend a lot of time in the countryside. But it doesn't mean they're not there.
It's a very interesting sector, the fishing angling sector, because it's almost like a large proportion of the participants in it sort of have this quiet acceptance of big cats being around, even though there can be real sceptics amongst people as well, amongst anglers and fishermen, because they've not encountered anything and think they should have done. But it's an occupation and pastime where the chances of having an encounter and a sighting are higher than many, aren't they? Because of the amount of time you're out in the outdoors and the type of situation, type of landscape, the type of waterside environment. So there's a higher chance than most other situations in the countryside. I hope we do have more fishermen and anglers coming on in the future. And also water bailiffs. You know, I think water bailiffs probably hear a good many stories about them.
I know a few bailiffs that have had a few encounters I've discussed with them in the past of different types of cats. Again, mainly the black variety. There'd be plenty if you reached out. Maybe I don't really go on forums as such, but you definitely have a lot of comments on that, 100%.
Being a water bailiff is quite a tough occupation, isn't it? You know, I guess they get a lot of hassle from some of the people they're trying to check up on. So they're probably much more wary of some of the dubious characters they have to deal with than the odd big cat around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Especially EA bailiffs and the fishery bailiffs, definitely. You know, they've got to deal with all contents of all types of individuals. And yeah, it's definitely a risky job. Very similar to your gamekeepers as well. Because, you know, they've come across things like that. They have to deal with all types of individuals. So they've definitely hardened characters.
They've got the power of arrest, haven't they, a water bailiff?
Yes, the EA. Yeah, they can caution you and then give you rights. Yeah, definitely.
I imagine also that they hear about other people's tales of big cats. I know we have got one listener who has had an encounter who is a water bailiff. So, yeah, they'll call for water bailiffs to get in touch then, if possible. Yeah. It'd be nice to hear from you guys. Is there anything else you'd like to say that we've not touched on finally before we sign off?
No, I think we've covered pretty much everything. I think the podcast is great. It's been a great job raising the awareness of the cats, and hopefully, eventually, they'll get some form of protection and the respect that they really do deserve, nationally anyway.
Well, thank you for that. And it's wonderful to hear that close-up sighting. And if you can spread the word amongst fellow anglers and say, you know, we'd like to have sort of more on the show, because they've no doubt got some fascinating tales to relay to us. It'd be nice to hear from them if they'd like to come on the show. So thanks ever so much for all your time and your points. Really enjoyed speaking to you.
No problem at all. Thanks, Rick.